Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Well, we've had multiple policy debates over the pros and cons of affirmative action in college admissions. We've done that a lot on this show, and we will certainly have more. But what do current college students themselves think about it? Well, that's the question Natasha Wariku asked students recently, and some of these are students who had been admitted into some of the nation's, or even I should say the world's, most elite universities. And she chronicles their answers in her book, The Diversity Bargain, and Other Dilemmas of Race, Admissions, and Meritocracy at Elite Universities. Wariku is an associate professor at Harvard's Graduate School of Education, and she joins us now. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so first of all, who'd you talk to?
So we talked to students, undergraduates on the Harvard, Brown, and Oxford campuses, and we talked to students from a range of backgrounds. These were all students who were born in the United States, in the U.S., and for in the U.K., U.K.-born students, but also talked to a bunch of both white students and students of color.
Okay. So then help us break down their answers a little bit. What did they say about, were they for, were they against? What were their thoughts about affirmative action?
So I'll talk about the United States,
yeah.
Because in Britain, there really is no affirmative action and there was no support for it among students, whether class or race-based. And in the United States, students were more likely than the average American to support affirmative action. But they did so, and their justification was that, well, it creates this diverse learning environment, and that's good for me because I know that I need to be exposed to a broad range of perspectives in order to be a well-educated kind of citizen of the world.
Okay, so hang on, let me jump in here. So they saw the creation of a diverse learning environment as positive because it was good for them.
That's right, yes.
Not necessarily good for the students who were given access to elite educations.
Yes. I mean, I should say that there were a range of perspectives, but this was the most common one and the most widely shared.
That actually kind of, I have to be honest, that surprises me. Because, I mean, these are, how old were these students when you talked to them?
They're, you know, between 18 and 21.
And this was in the past couple of years.
That's right.
So they have grown up steeped in a culture, in a society that's had affirmative action debates for pretty much most of their lives.
Yeah.
And one would think that maybe we're messaging in the wrong way. I don't know. But that they, that, so that they would think, the argument, the common political argument is that affirmative action exists so that in part it's good for the students who deserve greater access to these elite institutions, but that's not why these students say it's a good program?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, there are, you know, I think the kind of public debate is often about this question that you're talking about. But in higher education, part of the way that universities tend to talk about admissions is through this diversity argument. And part of this dates back to the way that affirmative action has been dealt with in the U.S. Supreme Court. So if we go back to the late 1970s, the Bakke decision, where the U.S. Supreme Court basically said that Justice Powell said, well, you know, you can consider race among a whole host of other considerations in a kind of holistic review. You can't have quotas, but you can do that in as much as it serves a compelling state interest. And that interest that was permissible was this idea of a diverse learning environment. So that's where this kind of idea of the diverse learning environment kind of started, and it kind of took off. And this is the one legal justification that has been accepted in courts and that has been used. And universities have really taken this on, and that's the language that they use. And so I think students hear it from their college counselors when they're in high school. They hear it again when they get to college. There's all this talk of diversity. And, you know, I think that, and on the one hand, I think that's positive. There's a lot of research to show that this diverse learning environment really does positively impact students of all ethnic backgrounds and racial backgrounds. But it also misses this larger question of inequality that you're talking about and the benefits to students who are you know, the targets of affirmative action.
Okay, so maybe then more of a good thing here than I initially thought. Point taken, but you call it the diversity bargain, though.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
So tell us more about that.
Yeah. So the diversity bargain is this, that in the United States, that students are more likely to support affirmative action than, you know, most ordinary Americans. And ordinary Americans, I should say, a lot do support affirmative action, but are more divided. But they do so, white students do so in exchange for a few expectations. And I talk about three in the book. And the first one is that they expect students, Black and Latino students on campus, who, you know, they assume all Black and Latino students have benefited from affirmative action, and then that they should integrate with their white peers. Because if affirmative action is about creating this diverse learning environment, when they notice, say, a table of Black students in the cafeteria or their Latino roommate joining the Latino Students Association, they feel like, well, isn't the point that you're here to integrate, and why are you in that minority space? And of course, you know, they don't always notice all the tables of white students in the cafeteria, and don't understand how those, you know, minority dominant spaces might be important kind of support networks for those students. So that's the first one. The second kind of implication of this way of thinking about affirmative action is that white students sometimes had essentialized understandings of what it means to be Black or Latino. So they would say things like, well, you know, there was a Black student in my high school, but, you know, had a very quote unquote white experience, and that student shouldn't benefit from affirmative action. So it's often kind of linked to poverty. So there's this idea that in order to be seen as Black or Latino, you have to have had a certain kind of lived experience. So rather than expanding what it means to be Black or Latino in the United States, which is a range of class backgrounds, et cetera, that is sort of narrow understanding. And the third implication is what I call a kind of reverse discrimination script, yeah. Right? That if affirmative action is there to benefit me, then I'm very quick to claim reverse discrimination if I don't get something. So, you know, I had a white student say, if I hadn't gotten into Harvard, this is a student at Harvard, then I would have felt that I'd been discriminated against. If someone else that I knew and who was equally qualified and who was a minority, if they'd gotten in over me. So this is a student who got into Harvard, you know, arguably one of the hardest universities to get into, but so I call it a script because it's already there. And imagine the student now going on to apply to graduate school or an internship or a job and not getting it. Affirmative action becomes a quick target. And again, because affirmative action is supposed to benefit that student, any, you know, loss or any setback can be easily attributed to.
So one thing that I hear in what that person told you is the impossibility of the other student, the student of color, actually being more qualified.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because
I hate to say this, but like, isn't that kind of, that's just maybe an unconscious racism?
I don't think the student would say that. I think but you're right that it's this kind of catch-22, and it's like how it's you know, there's no way to sort of, you know, explain that. And these, you know, these decisions are so competitive. Mm-hmm. You know, these colleges have these elite colleges have admissions rates that are, you know, well under, you know, close to 5%. And so for every one student who has, you know, a small kind of has some kind of provision for affirmative action, there's 19 students who didn't get in, who, you know, may use that reverse discrimination script to sort of explain why they didn't get in.
Yeah. So I'm just wondering, what then do you take away from your conversations with these students about the effectiveness or the appropriateness or just sort of the way that we talk about affirmative action? Because is what you're finding showing that that these young people have actually, you know, listened carefully to these national conversations their views are completely consistent with how we talk about affirmative action? Or is there a gap? Is there something that we're doing wrong here?
Well, I do think that, you know, especially when we think about higher education and the whole, you know, the whole like lead up to higher education in terms of college counseling and, you know, in high schools, is that we do need a shift in terms of, you know, really helping students understand the historical roots of racial inequality in the United States. And I do feel like we do a not as good a job in helping students understand, you know, how it is that the fact that, you know, Black students were systematically excluded from these universities, and that, you know, when we have had all these means of social mobility, the GI Bill that was supposed to bring social mobility to these GIs coming back from war, how Black students were allowed to be excluded from these universities. And so there were all these ways in which racial inequality got perpetuated in the United States and specifically in higher education. But students don't really understand that. And we don't, you know, we don't teach about it in history class. We don't acknowledge that when we talk, universities don't talk about that when they talk about affirmative action.
You know, we did talk in detail about what some white students told you. And forgive me, I should have asked this earlier, but can we, for a minute, speak in more detail about what students of color told you about their views and perceptions of affirmative action?
Yeah. So students of color also talked about appreciating the diversity of their college environments and talked a lot about that. But they, you know, as you might expect, didn't see themselves, their role on campus as there to edify their white peers. And, you know, that got very tiring for them. And they, you know, they were there to get an education just like everyone else. And they talked about, you know, in the book, I also talk about kind of race relations on campus. And a lot of the students of color talked about these kind of pivotal moments of their childhoods in which they experienced a pretty serious kind of racial incident. You know, a teacher saying, well, I didn't expect you to be getting these kinds of grades. Look at the kids who are in the honors class. You don't look like them. And, you know, all kinds of stories like this. Mm. And so they bring those kind of experiences with them to college and you know, are unsure about what that experience on a predominantly white campus is going to be like. And that creates anxiety in them, you know, and there are these kind of experiences in which they feel they've experienced a kind of what we call microaggression, where white students, you know, seemingly, you know, unintentionally kind of offending or saying something insensitive. And this, you know, these were kind of regular experiences.
No, if I may, you're on the faculty at Harvard, elite amongst the elite.
Yes.
You're also a woman of color.
Yes.
I mean, have you ever personally grappled with any of this?
You know, that's a good question. As a faculty, you're putting me on the spot. As a faculty member, you know,
it's
you're
live
kind
radio,
of
forgive me.
I'm in a slightly different position. You know, I teach classes on race and ethnicity at Harvard, and so I feel like what my role in this university is more to kind of help students is to create a space in which students can grapple with some of these issues and talk to each other and have open and honest conversation about some of these issues and not have so much anxiety about. I mean, there is anxiety, but be able to sort of get past that. Because I think really that's what we need, and we need more spaces for students to be able to engage with each other.
By the way, so why did you talk to folks at Oxford?
So I was really interested. So there's two parts to the story.
Yeah.
One is that I was based in the UK. I was on the faculty at the University of London at the time. I'm from the United States. And living in the UK, I was really struck by how the ways that people talk and think about race is so different than the United States. So that's sort of across the board. And then within higher education, I was struck by the kind of lack of attention to diversity. You know, in the United States, we have departments of African American studies. Sometimes we have a lot of universities have ethnic studies. There's a lot of discussion. And, you know, now that I'm on the faculty at Harvard, we have a lot of discussion about increasing diversity among our students and faculty. We have deans of diversity. There was really none of that in Britain. And again, I was really struck by how that just wasn't on the table. We weren't talking in faculty meetings about how to increase access to our universities. And so I started thinking about how these different experiences in higher education might shape the way that students think and talk about admissions and race very differently. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of what led me to this comparison.
So my last question is this is really interesting because when we're talking about these young people at elite colleges and universities, we're also talking about some of our future leaders.
Yes.
Right? And correct me if I'm wrong, but one takeaway I'm getting from this is that perhaps support for affirmative action is possibly more tenuous than we would think it is. That there's robust institutional support.
Yeah.
Harvard and others as institutions have gone to court to defend affirmative action. But we're talking about individual students here where, you know, as long as it's couched in terms of it benefits you,
yeah,
and your learning environment, people are for it. But but when you turn the benefit away from them personally, perhaps their support is a little more tenuous. And
yeah.
I mean, and those are attitudes that they've they'll likely take with them off campus into their futures. I mean, am I reading too much into that?
No, that's absolutely true. And that's one of the things I say in the book, is that why I care about these students on these elite campuses and what they think so much is that they are our future leaders. They're going to take those ideas about fairness and what's a fair system of selection as they go off and become, you know, employers and they're making hiring decisions, or policymakers and they're deciding, you know, on the welfare state, or working in the media and shaping the discourse and how we think and talk about race and fairness and equity. And so I think that this is, it is very important how they're thinking about this. And it's very problematic and worrisome that there's a lack of talk of racial inequality and the way that that impacts students' lives.
Well, the book is The Diversity Bargain and Other Dilemmas of Race, Admissions, and Meritocracy at Elite Universities. It's by Natasha Wariku. She's an associate professor at Harvard's Graduate School of Education. Really fascinating book. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.